Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it's about that time. Happy Friday, August 11th. 2017, you are indeed locked into WKAR's current sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We're coming right at you today with a ton of sports talk that we hope intrigues you. On today's current sports, we will talk briefly, and I do mean brief, about Michigan State football's scrimmage yesterday. Of course, these scrimmages are closed off from the public. The media are not allowed to cover them. We just have to simply go off of a post-scrimmage report that is sent via email. So we'll bring that news to you all. We'll tell you who won, and you'll get to hear from head coach Mark D'Antonio concerning that scrimmage. Also, breaking news concerning former Ohio State running back great Ezekiel Elliott, who is now a star for the Stars of the Dallas Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott has been handed down a suspension from the NFL due to a domestic violence incident that took place back in Columbus, Ohio. We'll dissect that bit of news for you all. Also, the NBA is expected to approve player resting rules. I know that many major networks that cover the NBA are finally breathing a sigh of relief as it comes to that topic. And we will have coverage from Jennison Fieldhouse at today's Michigan State University Women's Volleyball Media Day, as we got the chance to chat with head coach Kathy George, along with a few of her troops, as they prepare for another year, trying to make a deep run in this season's NCAA tournament. You don't want to miss that chat. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk about Zach Randolph, former Michigan State basketball star, and his stupidity as it concerns marijuana. That and more. If you want to be a part of the show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media, various ways you can do that. You can weigh in by shooting us a tweet at WKAR underscore sports, or my Twitter handle at Al Martin WKAR. And you can, of course, watch the live stream and comment via that way at Facebook.com/current sports. So much to get to, and you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Right, and we start with Michigan State football's first scrimmage of the preseason year. Michigan State's first scrimmage of preseason camp took place yesterday at Spartan Stadium. MSU's defense topped the offense in Thursday's 171 play scrimmage. 27-24 was the final with a, of course, modified scoring system. No team or individual stats were provided. It was closed to the media as it customarily is and moved up to accommodate the Big Ten Network's visit to practice on Saturday. Of course, one of the main questions, though, lingering on the minds of many Spartan football fans out there is who exactly will be the backup quarterback to Brian Lewerke. Maybe Damian Terry? Well, he is no stranger to quarterback competitions, of course, all the way back to his true freshman year back in 2013. He is now a fifth-year senior. Terry finally spent a summer healthy and is hoping to hold off redshirt freshie Messiah DeWeaver before September 2nd, that opener against Bowling Green. More on Michigan State scrimmage later on this hour. Michigan State was on the road to victory, and head coach Mark D'Antonio guided the Spartans to a bowl game in each of his first nine seasons, the longest streak in program history. But of course, that run ended last year due to a 3-9 season. And CBS Sports has put out predictions as it pertains to many college football teams and possible postseason implications. Jerry Palm, in his first projections of the year for CBS Sports, he predicts that Michigan State will face Army in the Armed Forces Bowl after this season. The game will be played on December 23rd at TCU's Amon G. Carter Stadium out in Fort Worth, Texas. But again, we don't really know what's going to happen before the season even begins, right? Just another prediction to get folks like us talking, right? Michigan State volleyball was picked 17th in the 2017 American Volleyball Coaches Association's preseason poll. That's a mouthful, which was announced Wednesday afternoon. The Spartans are one of eight Big Ten teams selected. The other Big Ten teams include Minnesota, Nebraska, Penn State, Wisconsin. Michigan comes in one spot ahead of the Spartans at number 16, and Purdue is holding down the back end at number 25. More from MSU volleyball in just a moment. We got the very cool opportunity. And, you know, I feel like Kathy George and her staff, they do a great job in spicing up Media Day each and every year. It's not your usual just sit down with the athletes and throw questions at them, as well as the coaches, of course. But they always try to start Media Day with something cool and different. 2 years ago, the media, we got a chance to play in a volleyball game and learn tips from the team, as well as head coach Kathy George. And then we will pair it up on teams and bowl. We actually bowl. And then after we bowl, that spare time, we got a chance to finally do interviews. And then last year, they did much of the same thing. And this year, we got a chance to sit down with Kathy and her staff as they taught us the X's and O's, the strategy behind the world of college volleyball. Very cool stuff. And then, of course, we talked with Kathy George and a few of our players. So you don't want to miss those interviews. We will have that in segment B of the show. The Detroit Lions participated in a joint practice yesterday with the Indianapolis Colts. That's where newly acquired right tackle Rick Wagner, yeah, he left with an undisclosed injury. He participated in team drills to start the practice, but had to leave the field by the middle of the workout. Lions head coach Jim Caldwell, he chose not to specify his injury, but said that Rick Wagner, quote, had a little issue, but he'll be all right, end quote. All right, the Drew Verhagen experiment, has not gone well for Brad Ausmus and company down in Detroit. Through his now two starts this year, Verhagen is sporting an 0-2 record with a 7.82 ERA. And yesterday's 7-5 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates, Verhagen lasted just 3.2 innings, allowing 6 earned runs and 9 hits. The Pirates jumped all over the Tigers early, scoring runs in the first 4 innings. Detroit made a bit of a run in the bottom of the ninth. Victor Martinez and James McCann both drove in 1 run each, but it was not enough, and the Tigers took the L. Detroit will now welcome division rival Minnesota. That's right, the Twins, to Comerica Park starting tonight. First pitch slotted for 7:10 p.m. The Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series is heading to the Mitten this Sunday as some of the best drivers from around the world will head to Michigan International Speedway. The race is scheduled for 3 p.m. on Sunday with TV coverage from NBCSN qualifying the event The event will take place later on today at 5 p.m. So we will see who qualifies for the race this Sunday, with this race being one of the last weekends in the regular season. The focus among many drivers will be solely on the playoffs, as only three spots remain. Chase Elliott, Jamie McMurray, Matt Kenseth, and Clint Bowyer are all in the battle for those spots. NBA owners are expected to approve player resting rules in September, designed to cut back on teams benching healthy players for regular season games, a person with direct knowledge of the situation told that to USA Today Sports. The rules will be in place by the start of the 2017-18 year, and there will be consequences for teams that do not adhere to them. Adam Silver, NBA commish, also understands a team's desire to rest a healthy player. Silver hinted at the idea of teams not resting multiple starters in the same game and not resting a starter for away games. To that end, the league office sent a memo to teams detailing scheduling improvements, such as eliminating four games in five nights and reducing back-to-backs. That will help teams eliminate the need to rest healthy players. I absolutely love that idea, and I love how Adam Silver is always proactive. Love it. Among the schedule changes, the league will start a week earlier this season, creating more days to play an 82-game schedule. Elimination of four games in 5 days and 18 games in 30 days. Reduction of back-to-backs, as I mentioned. 14.9 per team, down 16.3% per team last season. And reduction of single-game road trips by 17%. And day two of the PGA Championship is currently underway from Quail Hollow in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ricky Fowler sits at 3-under, 1-under today. U.S. Open winner Brooks Koepka, he's 3-under. He tees off at 1:35 p.m. Jason Day will tee off at 1:35 p.m. He is at 1-under. Then you have Rory McIlroy, who was, he finished really, really bad yesterday. He was 4-over, plus 3 on the day. Jordan Spieth, 1-over, and he will tee off at 1:35 p.m. as well. Throughout this hour, we will keep you all updated as it concerns the PGA Championship. And the leaderboard is constantly shifting. And right now, Kevin Kinsner, he leads the field at 6-under par. He is 2-under through 15 in his round two. He carded a 67 in round one, along with Thorbjørn Olesen, who was really, really surprising in day one of the PGA Championship. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355 9527. Again, go to facebook.com/currentsports to join via live stream and tweet us at WKAR_sports and at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, let's keep this train pushing.
Well, it's her 10th practice, so I thought it went very well. Went about 130 plays in the scrimmage, so I think we got some things done. Guys played extremely hard, flew around, and you saw a lot of good things, both from our offense and defense. We had a couple positions. Our twos are our ones, and our ones are our twos. So that's a positive, but it gives everybody an opportunity to play and a lot of enthusiasm. So, and they've got a skill set, so they'll be look forward to watching them.
And And that is how we start this Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Happy Fri-yay, right? The weekend is upon us all. Really hope you all are having a great end to your work week, and we plan on making it just a bit better right here on WKAR AM 870 94.5 FM. I am your host, Al Martin, and we have a ton to talk about on today's show. As we customarily do, our phone lines are open. If you want to weigh in, simply call 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I know we have Mike from Saginaw on line one. I'm going to get to Mike in just a moment, but I want to first address what you just heard mixed in with Aaliyah's intro that is playing softly underneath me as we speak. Michigan State football. Yeah, first scrimmage of preseason camp. Now, again, folks, I have to address it because, I mean, you guys love college football just as much as I do. So you want to know about what's happening in your backyard here in mid-Michigan as it pertains to Spartan football. However, as we always highlight during these preseason scrimmages, they are closed off to the public. No stats are given. All we know is how many plays went down for that particular evening or afternoon or even morning, and we know what the final score was. That is about it. Michigan State, again, closed off from the media, from the public, and just going to work. What we do know is that MSU's defense topped the offense in yesterday's 171-play scrimmage. 27-24 was the final in a modified scoring system. So, you know, as we were coming back from Jennison Fieldhouse from Michigan State Women's Volleyball Media Day, our current sports intern, one of our current sports interns and reporters, Jacob Herbert, who was actually holding down the fort in the absence of Isaac Constance, who is taking some time off, Jacob engineering the show right now, he asked me about the scrimmage and asked, okay, how does the scoring system work? And I absolutely have no idea. It's very confusing. I remember we actually had Darian Harris on the show, former Michigan State linebacker and captain. And I asked him about the scrimmage and he said, Al, it's complex, man. And he started to break it down as to, you know, how many points happen for a particular instance throughout a scrimmage. Like, you know, a fumble is worth some points for the defense and an interception. And if you force the offense to go three and out, and of course a touchdown for the offense, as well as a made field goal and even a certain big, you know, big play pickup on the ground or through the air is worth a lot of points as well. So we don't know what that means. All we know is that the defense topped the offense. And again, there's a lot of storylines coming out of Michigan State camp. When it comes to the comments from Mark D'Antonio, again, he went on to say, and you heard a bit of what he had to say just a moment ago, quote, "This is our 10th practice. I thought it went very well. We went about 130 plays on offense and defense. I think we got some things done. Guys played extremely hard and flew around. At a couple of positions, our twos are our ones, and our ones are our twos. So that's a positive." If I had to dissect what that means, I'm guessing that Coach D'Antonio basically is still figuring out his starting depth chart. All right, who's the starter is going to be? I mean, he's you know, the depth chart is basically ever changing. It's fluid right now. Guys are trying to prove themselves, and that's no surprise, seeing as though this Michigan State football team is still young with only 8 scholarship seniors on the entire roster. He went on to say, quote, "It gives everyone an opportunity to play, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, and they, young players, have a skill set. So I'm looking forward to watching them. Today I felt good about both the offense and defense. Yesterday a little bit more offense than defense. We sort of have groundhog days going here in preseason camp. So I can't keep it all straight, but I thought it was a very good scrimmage, and guys made some plays on both sides of the ball." So Michigan State right now, as they push forward and as that September 2nd date against Bowling Green looms at Spartan Stadium in the start of the college football year, Michigan State pushes along and will return to practice late
this afternoon for its 11th workout of preseason camp. Also, want to note, you know, it's so interesting to me. You know, I began yesterday's show talking about the National Football League and addressing how, you know, I don't understand for the life of me why NFL teams, why every NFL team has to hold 4 preseason games. It doesn't make sense to me. Now, I understand from a standpoint of Roger Goodell, who's the commissioner of the National Football League. I mean, you do get a little moolah from these games. You know, I was talking with my fraternity brother yesterday, and he's actually thinking about attending the Detroit Lions preseason game against the Colts over the weekend down at Ford Field. You know, it's not much. You can get reasonable prices, $30 to go down there and enjoy a preseason football game. However, you know, looking at the entire picture here, this is the NFL. This is the most popular North American professional sporting league that we have here in our country. They're not crying for money at all right? The ratings are great, despite what many may think. There were multiple reasons as to why the NFL ratings took a dip. The biggest reason is because we had a pretty big thing called an election. Yeah, it was an election year. And the NFL was trying to compete against Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and that hurt the ratings a bit. But after the election, the ratings evened out, and that's something I highlighted 2 weeks ago. The NFL is still the NFL. It is still the league here in the U.S. of A. So the NFL isn't hurting for money. So it doesn't make any sense to me when you look at a preseason game. First off, they're not entertaining. They're not really competitive. The optics are bad. And you get all of that with the risk of injury. I just don't understand it. I really hope that the NFL makes some changes when it comes to preseason, because I look at college football, and you know, you look at college football. College football does not need preseason games in order to warm up their players or make cuts on the depth chart. All right, I just don't understand that. Again, you're talking about nickels to dimes, in my opinion, when you evaluate the amount of money that's brought into the NFL when it comes to preseason football games. But rest assured, in the world of college football, that's clear evidence that you don't need preseason games to warm up to make sure you are ready for week one of the regular season. Because week one of college football is so entertaining. And those guys are ready to suit them up and play. All right. In just a moment, I want to bring Mike from Saginaw in. I want to take Mike's call. And in just a moment, after Mike is done, I want to comment on the story right now that is dominating sports headlines from here to Timbuktu. That is Ezekiel Elliott, former Ohio State running back great, who is now balling out for my Dallas Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott has been handed down a suspension by the NFL for violating the personal conduct policy. Before I sound off on that, I'm going to allow Mike from Saginaw, who's been waiting patiently on line one, to sound off on whatever's on his sports noggin. Mike, what's up, my man?
How you doing there, Al? I just want to know why football coaches always have to shut everybody out.
That's a no-brainer, Mike. That's a no-brainer. I mean, just think about it, Mike. If you're a head football coach of a program, and sure, you're trying to, you know, as you prepare for a season especially, you are trying mm-hmm. to make sure that your players are fully focused, you know, mm-hmm. ready to tune out all the distractions. We all know that there are so many distractions here in 2017, especially for your modern-day athlete. Social sure. media, you know, mm-hmm. I won't go down that rabbit hole right now. But there's always been distractions, but here in 2017, there are so many distractions for an athlete to just not be focused. So I totally get it. You know, why coaches are saying, you know, to use a phrase from Jim Harbaugh at U of M, you know, taking his team into the submarine and shielding off everybody else. I like that mentality. And to be quite frank with you, Mike, if I was a head coach, I would probably do the same thing.
Do you think basketball coaches do the same?
It depends on the coach. It really does depend on the coach. You know, a guy like Tom Izzo, you know, what's so cool about being a sports reporter here in East Lansing, you know, is that I get to cover a Hall of Fame basketball coach like Tom Izzo. And Tom Izzo, something really special that he does is that he allows us media members to sit in on practice. That is like virtually unheard of when it comes to many programs, many college basketball programs across the board. I mean, you just don't hear that often. You know, a college basketball coach or a college coach, period, allowing the media to sit in on practice. You know, I talk with a lot of seasoned reporters here in the area, and they tell me all the time how back in the day, media members sitting in on practice was not out of the norm. But, you know, now it's become very sheltered. But time allows you to sit in. Now, I can't report on what I see or what I hear or what plays they're running, of course. I mean, I can't tweet out anything during that practice. But still, you know, I get a chance to see Tom Izzo go to work and motivate his players and see what playing under Tom Izzo and playing for a Division I basketball team is all about. And that's not normal. But a lot of coaches don't do that. So to answer your question, Mike, that was a very long-winded answer. To answer your question, though, it all depends on who is the head of the program.
Okay. Here's what you talk about distractions. What I was watching TMZ last night, and they showed
TMZ. Okay. Yeah.
In the public housing project in California, and they arrested him, and they show him walking out the courtroom. And everything, they was trying to ask him a question, and the guy, I don't know, was that his protector or whatever, they told him, if you photograph me a kid, they'll do your something, man. But I'm just laughing, man, because I said, I know Zach Randolph got plenty of money for playing basketball. Why some athletes figure they have to be so street, man? Because I'm just thinking about that.
And especially a man, Mike, that is knocking on the door of 40 years old. A man in Zach Randolph who just signed a 2-year, $24 million contract with the Sacramento Kings. What in the world are you doing in the Watts section of Los Angeles, which is the projects of L.A., with weed, that amount of marijuana on your person? When I read the details, I didn't know the specific details when we were on the air yesterday during the show. But after the show, when I read the details of what exactly went down with Z-Bo out in L.A., the Watts section of Los Angeles, the hood, as you just put, what in the world is Zach Z-Bo Randolph doing there? Just idiotic, stupid, whatever adjective that amounts to dumb that you want to use.
You know what, man? I just couldn't believe he would want to go down there, number one, because most of the athletes, they come from them environments. First thing they try to do is get their mother a house, and then they try to get them some peace of mind. They ain't got people loitering around them and everything else. That's Allen Iverson's problem. He can't get rid of his hangers-on and stuff, man.
Yeah, that was his problem once, I tell you that. I don't know about now. I think he's turned the tide a little bit, but he's not showing up to this Big Three tournament that Ice Cube is putting on, so I don't know what's going on there. But, Mike, I'm totally with you, Mike, on this one.
I just can't believe it. What I want to ask you, too, I'm going to let you move the show along. I want to know what is going on with Brandon Dawson and what is going on with the guy from Muskegon. What's his name that left the pro? What is his name? I can't get his name. The guy who played for Muskegon High School, and he only stayed at Davis, is it?
Deontay Davis?
No. The one who just stayed only a year for Michigan State basketball, then he went pro.
Yep, I'm assuming you're talking about Deontay Davis. Yeah, he went to Muskegon High School. He's from Muskegon, Michigan. He went one and done. Had a solid stint, I guess you can say. Not a lot of playing time with the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm not sure what the update is on Deontay Davis. I know Graham Couch of the LSJ, Lansing State Journal, he got a chance to sit down with Deontay on how he's trying to acclimate to the National Basketball Association. Actually, him and Vince Carter have a very cool relationship, but now Vince is no longer balling out for the Memphis Grizzlies. But right now, what I'm seeing on his profile is that he will be playing in the G League for the Iowa Energy, which is affiliated with, I believe, the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that's an update on Deontay.
Oh, here's the one right quick. The Pro-Am League they have in Lansing with Miles Davis. Why can't he go back and play in that league then?
He just didn't want to. He could have. He's trying to chase his dream in the pros right now, Mike. That's what that was
all
about.
All right, man. All right. Al. Thank you very much. Man.
Thank you, Mike. Mike from Saginaw always bringing the heat, and we will continue to do that. I want to hit our first break, and when we come back, got to discuss the breaking news concerning Ezekiel Elliott. If you have not heard, the National Football League has handed down a suspension for violating personal conduct. We'll bring you those details and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. In just a moment, we are going to play our coverage from today's Michigan State Women's Volleyball Media Day. Such a really cool event. We know we have Karina Garcia as well as Jacob Herbert behind the glass right now. Both are, you know, Current Sports interns and reporters for us, doing an outstanding job. And they both actually got the chance to accompany me at this morning's media day, a very cool event. I, as I said at the top of the hour, Kathy George and Jamie Baldwin, the entire staff that deal with Michigan State volleyball, they do a great job every year of bringing something new, different, and creative outside the box to not make media day just your average, hey, here's our coaches, hey, here's our players, ask them a few questions, we'll see you when the season starts. It's not your average boring media day. It's really interactive and fun. And this morning, we got a lesson on the sport of volleyball. And I tell you what, Jacob, I had no idea that this sport is that intricate. When you watch it and you don't understand it, you just see a ball flying on both sides over the net and you say, okay, yeah, that's volleyball. But there is so much strategy and so many plays that are involved. My head is still spinning, dude. Did you enjoy that this morning?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. It's kind of taken away from my Reflection Friday. I wanted to give a shout-out to MSU Volleyball, but that was a really, really cool event. And you and I were joking beforehand, just talking about how would you do play-by-play for an event like that? Because, I mean, I would just be sitting there going, oh, she hit it. Oh, she hit it. And you know, but there's so much more. It's so much more complicated than that. My head's still spinning as well. But I feel like I understand the game a lot better and have a lot of respect for those girls who get out there and play. That's a lot to remember.
It is. And, real briefly, Karina's behind the glass. I know Karina Garcia, she played volleyball back during her high school days, and she doesn't like to toot her own horn, but tootie toot toot. I guess she was pretty good, according to her own account. Karina, just what we went through today, I'm curious to ask you this because I didn't know anything about what a libero is and what a setter does and how the setter is basically the quarterback of the entire thing. Kathy George went through a 30 line, and she went through a lot of lines on the court. Was that any new information to you, or did you pretty much know what she was talking about?
No, I was just curious. I mean, it wasn't new to me. I was just curious as to how Michigan State volleyball, you know, ran their plays. But, okay. I mean, basics are basics, so.
Right.
It wasn't new.
So it wasn't new. Just the concepts weren't new. Basically, what you're saying is every program has strategy, of course, and the way that they utilize those positions on the court are just a bit different. So you were curious as to see how Michigan State tries to confuse the opposition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very complicated game. I mean, I would say complex more than complicated. A lot of people just don't No, like it just looks like it's easy. You know, you just hit the ball, you just pass it. It's actually a lot harder than it looks. And up in the front, especially, is all strategy. So, yeah, it was really cool.
Very true. What position were you back in high school?
I was a libero.
You were a libero. What the heck is a libero? Because our listeners are saying, what in the world are they talking about right now? What is a libero?
It's one of the passers. It's like the safety in football. Like they run the defense.
Okay, gotcha. So you're like the quarterback of the defense then, in a way.
Yeah. Well, the quarterback would be the setter.
Is that on the okay, I'm so confused now. Okay, well, thank you, Corinne.
Defense and offense.
Because you got to play both, and depending on if you win that serve, then you get another chance at playing offense. But if you don't, it goes to the other side. Now you have to play defense. Fill the gaps is what Kathy George kept saying this morning. So it's a lot to take in. It was fun, though. It was a fun time. And for those who don't know, Karina, where did you go to high school at? You're from New York. What high school?
I went to Pelham High School. Pelham Memorial High School.
Were they pretty good at sports?
Yeah. Our best sports were hockey and volleyball, so.
Okay. So, yeah, this definitely was a good refresher for you this morning then. All right. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to bring up the story just briefly before we push the show along. But Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott has been suspended 6 games by the NFL for violating the personal conduct policy. The suspension comes as a result of an investigation that started more than a year ago after an ex-girlfriend accused Elliott of domestic violence in Columbus, Ohio. Now, the Columbus City Attorney's Office announced in September that it would not pursue charges against Elliott because of, quote, conflicting and inconsistent information, end quote. But the NFL can penalize a player even without legal charges. Now, it's interesting because I had put out a status literally minutes before we got on the air today that said, quote, on my Facebook page, quote, I'm a Cowboys fan till death. But wrong is wrong, and Ezekiel Elliott put himself in this position. Don't put your hands on a woman. Simple. When you evaluate how this story is played out, now again, I want to reiterate this. Legally, no charges came against Elliott because of, again, quote, conflicting and inconsistent information. But again, the NFL can penalize a player even without charges. This is an investigation that has been going on for quite some time now. Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, went on the record over the weekend, I saw, during the NFL Hall of Fame game. And he was on the air talking about what could possibly happen to Ezekiel Elliott. And he had full confidence that this would not be a big deal and that nothing would come from it. So basically, when I see that the NFL has decided to hand down a 6-game suspension, what that basically tells me, fandom aside, is that Ezekiel Elliott did do something wrong here. We don't know exactly what went down with him and his now ex-girlfriend, but what this suspension tells me is that Ezekiel Elliott did do something wrong. And as I put that on my status, I had a response from a couple of our listeners, one being David, the other being Ben, and there was this dialogue that happened back and forth in which they were asking about whether or not the league does have a domestic violence policy. And they, in fact, do. If you remember, when we saw what happened with Ray Rice and how in your face that story was and how the NFL completely dropped the ball when it came to that case. If you remember, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, he was criticized that summer for his handling of Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice, who received then only a 2-game suspension following his arrest for domestic violence. And then what happened? We saw that video of Ray Rice in the elevator punching his, I believe, now wife. And after we saw that, and we saw Ray Rice drag out the elevator that young woman, everything hit the fan. And the NFL knew that they had to do something differently. Goodell sent in a letter, actually, to the NFL owners, which is up online and you can read it yourself, outlining stiffer penalties in the NFL for instances of domestic violence. A 6-game suspension without pay for the first offense and a lifetime ban for a second offense. And it's amazing to me, as I went on Twitter and as I went on social media and I started to read the reaction, specifically from my Dallas Cowboys fandom, it's amazing to me how everyone wanted to have the conversation of how this would affect the Dallas Cowboys team moving forward on the field. And not looking at the bigger picture and asking, how can something like this happen? Or questioning the character of Ezekiel Elliott. That's the bigger conversation that needs to be had. Or even sympathizing with the young woman in this case. And asking if she is okay going through this whole ordeal. Because I don't know, and no male will ever know what it's like to go through something like that. Where you're involved in a domestic dispute that leads to violence. And Elliot, there's been a paper trail, folks, if you don't know. The NFL officials say that the league investigated Elliot's case thoughtfully and thoroughly and said that Elliot violated the personal conduct policy. The league examined text messages and retained medical and legal experts to help Goodell make his decision. Before disciplining Elliot, the NFL considered the domestic violence allegations from February and July 2016, as well as the St. Patrick's Day incident, in which he pulled down a woman's shirt. Though it is said that that did not factor in the league's decision on this discipline. Also, before the team left for training camp, Elliott was allegedly involved in an incident at a Dallas bar that left a man with a nose injury. Dallas police suspended the investigation because they could not contact the victim and no witnesses came forward. Zeke has a problem and I hope the brother gets some help. But the bigger conversation we need to have and need to continually have is domestic violence in 2017 and why it occurs. Why does something like this happen? That's my thoughts on it. I have no problem with the 6-game suspension. And right now, having the conversation as to why, or how, I should say, this is going to affect the Dallas Cowboys in the win and loss column, that is not the conversation that I plan on having on this Friday. Jacob.
Yeah, I just kind of want to piggyback off of some of the points that you made. And I just want to preface this by saying that I have never in any way been in the spotlight when it comes to playing sports. I played soccer all 4 years in high school, but other than that, I have no idea what it's like to be the quote-unquote big man on campus or in the spotlight in any way. But I don't know what it is about these athletes that when they... I mean, you would think after the Ray Rice... Ray Rice wasn't the first... You know,
Not at all. But he wasn't the first one. Yeah,
you would think that how long that process, you know, aside from, you know, what he did, but how long that process, you know, went on for him to get his punishment, whatever. You would think a guy like Zeke Elliott and other players in the league would learn from something like that and say, look, if I do what Ray Rice did, I'm going to end up, you know, Ray Rice doesn't have a job right now, mm-hmm. as far as I know, he might be somewhere, but I'm mind boggled by that.
And I can tell in making your point here, Jacob, that you're a bit conflicted here because you're trying to figure out how does something like this happen? And what you hear all the time, and I think to a degree it's a cop-out, is that NFL players are taught to be killers on the field, right? To inflict pain on the opposition. To try and turn that off after practice or after a game may be a bit of a challenge, which I understand to a certain degree, but you know right from wrong. So don't give me that.
You know, yeah, I don't think that's a good excuse at all.
Not to put your hands on a woman, that is something that's a no-brainer, right? That is common sense. And far too often do we see stories like this come across our headliners on the regular, especially when it pertains to the National Football League. I'm curious to get our listeners' thoughts on this.
Yeah, and that's kind of an unfortunate line of thinking because...
It is.
These... scenarios happen so much that I can only speak for myself here, but you kind of become numb to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, another football player, another athlete, you know, put his hands on a woman, which is obviously something you should never do, but
right.
You just kind of become desensitized to it. unfortunately.
And that's the word. Right. We see it so often. It's becoming like, oh, another one, you know?
Right.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Line two right now, Austin from Kalamazoo wants to weigh in on the Zeke situation. Austin, what's up, my guy? How you doing, man?
Good. How you doing today?
Great. What's on your mind, my brother?
Man, but just this whole situation.
Oh, Austin, you're kind of breaking up on us, man. You're kind of breaking up on us. So I don't know where you are right now as far as your reception goes. Can you hear me? Can you hear us now?
Can you hear me now, Al?
Yes, this is like a Verizon commercial. Yes, we got you now, brother.
Right. So I think it's several things to look at, man. I think we really need to look into the history of these guys and how they grew up, what they were exposed to. Do they have any mental illnesses? Because I think that's a thing that could be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And second, I feel like college athletes and just men in general, you know, this is something that a man should never do. But men in general should be required to take domestic abuse classes and the dangers of it and why you shouldn't do it. So we're not waiting until, you know, a guy like Zeke Elliott gets put on the forefront about it for us to handle it, to enroll him in some type of class with a psychologist or whatever. But these guys should be required because, like you said, they're wired to be killers. And it's definitely a cop-out to say they can't turn it off.
Right.
But then again, I mean, that's their mindset. They feel invincible. They feel nobody can stop them. Nobody's going to catch me. So these guys should be required to have some type of mental health training when it comes to domestic violence. And the second thing about this, and I hate to bring up the Kaepernick situation, but it really bothers me that this domestic violence case still leaves a player an opportunity to play in the NFL. But what Colin Kaepernick did, nobody wants anything to do with him. And it almost sends the message that, you know, domestic violence is bad, but we're still only going to suspend you for a couple games. I mean, look at when Ben Roethlisberger had his situation with domestic violence. He only got suspended for a couple games. They have the opportunity to appeal, the opportunity to play. But Colin Kaepernick, nothing is happening for this guy to have an opportunity to play. So you got to look at the integrity of the league and these NFL owners, because they're like, we're going to do everything we can to make sure Zeke Elliott gets back on the field. And that's a very, very negative integrity issue.
And you know what it comes down to, Austin? It comes down to talent. Simple as that. If you are a talented athlete, if you are a guy that can score touchdowns or put the ball in the basket or hit home runs, you're going to find a job in the pros regardless of what your negative paper trail may have been. I mean, Greg Hardy, for goodness sake, on my Cowboys, Jerry Jones.
Terrible, you know,
this
terrible.
Is a dude who threw his girl on a futon with loaded weapons. And Jerry Jones decided to sign him on the Cowboys and kind of brush that under the rug and say he's a changed man. If you are talented, if you can go out there and play, owners are and upper execs are willing to turn the other cheek and say, all right, we'll work on it. You know, we'll chalk that up as an L and keep it moving. It's crazy.
And last thing before I leave, a couple of things. First off, I miss you, Isaac, answering the phone. And second thing, happy 44th.
Hey, come on.
Happy 44th to who?
To hip hop. DJ Kool Herc. Today was the first day it was recorded that he spun the record and the breakers broke.
Wow. That's a good one. You just brought it, man. Great call as always. No offense to Jacob, though. Jacob's a great good engineer.
Jacob's the man. Jacob's the man.
Thank right? you. But thank we, you
we
so
do,
much.
We do love Isaac, though, right?
All right. See you guys. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you, Austin. Appreciate it, man. And let's take one more caller before we hit our final break here, Jacob. I know we do have Jason on line two. He's been waiting very patiently, and I know he wants to talk about a big golf tournament that I will be actually a part of very, very soon. Jason, what's up, dude?
Not much, brother. What's going on?
I am great. What's on your noggin?
Well, we're sitting here just going, looking at our donations and stuff that we have had raised so far for us. We're still sitting a little shy of our goal that we're looking at, so we need to get the word out there some more. And I want to challenge any of your listeners, okay, that love the country, love what the military has done for the country. You know, there are those soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guardmen that have went over and written a blank check when they signed their contract, you know, to include their life. And unfortunately, they were not able to make it home. And this golf tournament that we're playing in is in honor of them and their family members. What it is, we're playing in the Patriot Shootout up at Treetops Resort over the Labor Day weekend. And what it is, it's a tournament for veterans to play in. Basically, we're playing a PGA Tour-style event. And then we have a couple other offshoot competitions and stuff up there for fun. But what we do is we're raising money for the Folds of Honor Foundation, which is a foundation founded in 2007 by Major Dan Rooney. And what it is it provides $5,000 educational scholarships to the children and spouses of those we've lost or those that have been severely wounded and are not the same once they got back home. And you know, this has weighed heavy on my heart for the last few years because I did meet a gentleman who was from Grand Ledge who contracted liver cancer while he was on one of his deployments due to all the burn pits and stuff. And I struck up a really great friendship with Sergeant Robert Monroy. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we lost Robert a year before his 41st birthday here in 2015, in January of 2015. And he was a great and dear, loving friend of mine. And the one thing that Mr. Kevin McKinley, who's the director of ski and golf operations up there at Treetops, did is when he originally started the Patriots Shootout, he came up with a thing called the Dream 18, which was to give a person with a terminal illness the chance to come up and play with us Patriots in the Patriots Shootout for free of charge. And here, just shortly after Robert passed, so the 2015 Patriots Shootout, as we were sitting at the banquet, Kevin announced that it would no longer be called the Dream 18. It would be called Robert's Dream.
And love that. So love that.
Robert's wife is supposed to be back up there again, Anjanette. She's a great friend of mine. And what I want to challenge all the listeners of current sports to do is get out there, find the link on the current sports page that Alice put out that I shared with them. I challenge all of you to donate $40. So once you go to that donation page, it shows $10 increments. So if you're going to donate 40, you just put the number 4 in there. It'll multiply it up, comes to 40. Simple math. But I challenge you to support the children and spouses of those we've lost. I know the administrations that we've had over the past few years have risen awareness to suicides and stuff of military members. 22 a day is still way too many. You know, I have lost a couple soldiers from my tours due to that, and it's not a great thing. But we're really short, Al, of our goal of what we talked about, you know, looking to raise. We're short of it. And I just want to challenge all your listeners out there to get on and at least donate $40. If we get, quick math, you know, if the ability's out there to raise $5,000, that means we provide one educational scholarship. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if we get $1,000, $2,000, hey, that's contributing to the point and part of it. Now, I know there's a lot of golfers that listen to your show.
For sure. Yeah.
And I know a lot of them like to go to the course like you and I, where you can only legally drink and drive.
I hear you, Jason.
And yeah. They drink a beer by our number one supporter of the Folds of Honor Foundation in Budweiser. Mm-hmm. Budweiser, just this year at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, right before the seventh inning, they donated their $13 millionth to the Folds of Honor Foundation.
How about that?
So that's over 2,000 scholarships that Budweiser itself has been able to finance for the Folds of Honor. So what I want to do is I want to challenge all your listeners, again, like I said, get on Al's current sports page, donate $40 to this great cause, and Al and I will do you all proud when we go up there and we try and win this tournament.
Hey, I got to get my game tight and right. I'm actually trying to go out to the driving range later, dude. I got to come correct, man. But Jason, and we always appreciate your listenership and you calling in. It's a great cause, and we'll be sure as the date does come closer and closer as the days wind down here, we'll be sure to get you back on. Jason, I should say Sergeant Jason Fuller, thank you so much as always, my friend.
All right, brother. Be easy. We'll talk to you soon.
Always, brother. All right, let's hit a brief final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports with Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere.
You're never going out of style. Ooh, pretty baby, this world might have gone crazy.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. It is Friday, August 11th, 2017, and you all know that each and every Friday we close out the week of Current Sports by reflecting on our favorite interviews, segments, discussions, and maybe even bring up a few stories that we did not get a chance to elaborate on throughout the week. We call it Reflection Friday. Let's reflect. All right, so favorite moments of the week for me, I must say, Jacob, having Becky Ritke on yesterday, who's the executive director of the Michigan Senior Olympics. She was awesome to talk about the opening ceremony that will take place tonight. We're talking about individuals from 50 years old on up competing in sports. Very cool stuff. One of my favorite segments that we had throughout the week. We also had Victor Robinson of Peace Players International, affecting change of today's youth by unifying different races and backgrounds in the city of Detroit by putting them on the basketball court. Probably my two favorite interviews of the week. Great stuff there. And also want to give a big shout out to my former college roommate, Horacio, who will be getting married tomorrow. I'll be at his wedding. I'm looking forward to that as well. Congratulations, my man. Jacob, favorite moment of the week?
I'm still buzzing about that MSU volleyball. Volleyball one-on-one. I learned so much about the game, and I was really, really tuned in throughout that entire presentation. So really, really good job by that, by the team.
Definitely. And we obviously didn't get a chance to roll in a few of the bites that we had from today's media day due to how the show went about and you guys weighing in. But in about 30 minutes, we'll have two bites from Kathy George, as well as one of our star players, star freshman, Meredith Norris from Corunna, Michigan. She was last year's Miss Michigan Volleyball. She's now a freshman with the squad. We'll throw those two bites up on our website via WKAR.org. Same time, same place. So on Monday, our 1,000th show. It's going to be a special one. Be easy, people.